Well, I have the distinct honor of being the last talk of the session. I can tell, even from my own own internal state, that in being at past conferences, that attention sometimes lags towards the end of the day. But I want to try and rally our enthusiasm by saying that although the complexities here can be a little intimidating, it's also really exciting that we're proactively thinking about these things now instead of looking at environmental problems after the fact and reacting to them. So I think this is we stand in a unique place here. Well, today I want to give a database talk, and specifically I want to use data that we collected at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center to highlight that choosing between different production systems will have implications for biodiversity and the ecosystem services that diverse organisms provide to humans. So agricultural landscapes provide us with a variety of services, and traditionally, or typically, we think of their ability to provide us with food, fuel, and fiber. But in addition to providing these provisioning services, they also support a variety of non-crop organisms that provide services in their own right. These include regulating services like pest control and pollination, supporting services like soil nutrient cycling, and as the talk from the gentleman in South Dakota emphasized, that things like cultural activities like hunting. Well, modern agricultural practices have allowed us to produce amazing yields on our agricultural lands, but this has been associated with a decline in biodiversity and associated ecosystem services. And this has been documented for a variety of organisms, ranging from birds and plants to insects and mammals, and for services such as pollination and biocontrol, which are of economic value to humans because they affect how much crops yield. So increasingly, as demand for alternative energies goes up, we're going to be demanding not only food and fiber, but also fuel from our landscapes. And because the design of these production systems is in its early stages, we have a unique opportunity to consider not only how they're, what the bottom line will be for fuel production, but also what their relative impacts will be on different species and the services that they provide. Well, at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, where I'm conducting my research, our mission is to develop biomass production systems for cellulosic ethanol. We want to develop systems that are agronomically tractable, that farmers can grow, that yield feedstocks that can be easily processed into fuels, but also that support diverse species and ecosystem services. So a variety of crops could be grown to yield feedstocks for cellulosic ethanol, ranging from low diversity annual crops like corn to high diversity perennials like mixed prairie. And one of the first things we wanted to do is go out and compare biodiversity in crops, between crops located at different points along this continuum. And to do this, we focused on corn as a low diversity annual crop, switchgrass as a low diversity perennial crop, and mixed prairie as a higher diversity perennial crop. And we located corn, switch, and prairie sites across both Michigan and Wisconsin, and this is where we've conducted our work. It's important to mention that these currently aren't under management for biofuel production, but in the case of corn, are managed for grain, or in the case of the grasslands, are managed for wildlife or seed production. Well, at these sites, we sampled a variety of taxa, including plants, arthropods, birds, soil microbes, and bees, using sampling techniques appropriate for each group of organisms. So these graphs show variation in plant species richness, arthropod family diversity, and breeding bird species richness in these three habitats. So not surprisingly, we found the lowest diversity of plants in corn, an intermediate level of diversity in switchgrass, and greatest diversity in mixed prairie. Not surprising, since there was some intentional variation in plant diversity going on here. Arthropod diversity followed a similar pattern, with the lowest number of families being captured in corn, intermediate diversity in switchgrass, and about three times more families captured in prairie compared to corn. And during the spring breeding season, More species of birds were detected in both grasslands compared to corn habitat. Well, in addition to looking at the general diversity and abundance of these groups, we also wanted to focus on specific groups of organisms that provide us with services that we value. Specifically, we looked at predatory arthropods that can suppress pests, methanotrophic bacteria that can sequester methane, which is an important greenhouse gas, and bees, which are important as pollinators. We found that the biomass of predatory arthropods was lowest in corn, intermediate in switchgrass, and highest in prairie, while the genetic diversity of these methanotrophic bacteria was greater in both grasslands compared to corn, as was the relative abundance of bees, again higher in both grasslands compared to corn, although slightly lower in prairie, which is probably because the flowers were competing with our insect traps. Well, to summarize these results, I put together this table, which shows the relative abundance and diversity of each different group in the three habitats. And as the table emphasizes, both grasslands tend to support a greater biodiversity or abundance of organisms than corn, while prairie tended to support maximum abundance and diversity of the greatest number of organisms. Well, in addition to taking an inventory of biodiversity in these different habitats, we also wanted to begin to get a sense of how rates of ecosystem services might vary if we adopt these different production systems. And the work that I've been a part of has focused on pest control services, which are the suppression of insect pests by their arthropod predators. And to measure variation in potential rates of this service, we took eggs of a common corn pest and placed them in each of our corn switch and prairie sites and quantified how many got predated by predators. And then we related removal of these eggs by predators to variation in local characteristics of the habitat and the structure of the surrounding landscape. Well, the organisms that provide pest control services are mobile and can move between multiple habitats in their lifetime. And this means that local conditions may not be the only thing that matters. The structure of the landscape surrounding a given crop field may also affect rates of pest control services. To test for this, we quantified a variety of landscape variables for a 1.5 kilometer radius around each site, including the area of forest, annual crops, and herbaceous perennials, in addition to a measure of habitat diversity and the interspersion of perennial and annual habitats. And then we used the model selection approach to quantify the relative ability of these different predictor variables to explain variation in egg predation. Oops. And specifically, we constructed a set of models that contained all possible combinations of these predictor variables. And then we calculated Akiyaki's information criterion for each of these models, which allowed us to derive some Akiyaki weights for each variable. I know this is something that a lot of people, statistics consumers, aren't used to seeing, but basically these weights approximate the probability that a given predictor variable will be included in the most predictive model in the set. So our data suggests that egg predation was greater in both grassland habitats compared to corn. We not only want to look at variation between these categories of habitats, we also want to relate egg predation to variation in plant diversity. Oops. And to do this, we measured the diversity of plants that were in bloom at each of our sites as an easy-to-measure component of plant diversity. And our data suggested that egg predation increased at a decreasing rate with flower diversity, and specifically, egg predation was consistently high at sites that had more than 10 flower species. So this implies that incorporating only a modest amount of plant diversity into a biofield grassland could yield high levels of this ecosystem service. Well, the landscape was also important. Specifically, we found that egg predation within a patch increased with the area of herbaceous perennial habitat in the surrounding landscape. So what does this all mean? So our data suggests that at a local scale, the type of crop that a farmer plants in a given crop field will affect the ability of predatory arthropods to suppress pests. What a broader landscape scale, pest control services within that patch don't only depend on local conditions, they may also depend on the types of habitats that exist in the surrounding landscape. This is important because it suggests that bioenergy production could affect services at a landscape scale by driving changes in the area of key habitats. For example, you can imagine that deploying herbaceous perennials could be adopted as a biofuel crop. Well, our data imply that increasing the area of these crops could increase pest control services within some habitats. Well, some colleagues of ours at the University of Wisconsin have zoomed out even beyond that kilometer landscape scale to see how adopting different biofuel production systems could affect biodiversity of birds at a regional scale, and specifically the upper Midwest. And to do this, they obtained breeding bird diversity from surveys conducted across the region, and then calibrated models that predicted bird diversity as a function of land cover. They then used these models to predict what would happen to bird diversity under two different scenarios. In the first land use change scenario, grasslands and forages that were being grown on marginal lands were converted to annual crops. While in the second scenario, annual crops on these marginal lands were converted to grasslands and forages. So these represented two kind of extremes of the possible land use changes that could happen. Well, these two maps show predicted changes in bird diversity under the two scenarios, with cool colors representing predicted increases in bird diversity and warmer colors representing predicted declines. Well, in the first scenario, where perennial crops were converted to annual crops, the model predicted declines in bird diversity over about 20% of the landscape. In contrast, if annual crops were converted to herbaceous perennials, the model predicted an increase in bird diversity of up to 207% over 20% of the landscape. So this scenario-based modeling really highlights the divergent implications for biodiversity that could occur depending on what type of crop we choose. So in summary, our data suggests that the choices among different biofuel production systems will have implications for biodiversity and ecosystem services in bioenergy landscapes. At a local scale, the type of crop that a farmer chooses to plant could affect the ability of that habitat patch to support diverse species and the services that they provide. Scaling up a little bit, the collective land use decisions of farmers could drive changes in the area of key habitats to affect ecosystem services across agricultural landscapes. And scaling up even more, choices between different production systems could affect biodiversity of organisms like birds at a really broad regional scale. So understanding how these choices will impact biodiversity can enable us to create bioenergy landscapes that not only produce fuel, but also are of some value for biodiversity and allow us to reap benefits from the services those organisms provide. So with that, I want to acknowledge all the people whose efforts went into these results and take any questions if we have time or transfer over to a discussion format.